This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. This is the FitCast. And welcome to episode number 5 of the FitCast for May 14th, 2006. My name's Kevin Larrabee, and I'm joined, as always, by Dr. John K. Williams. How you doing today, John?
Hi, Kevin. I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. And we're joined by a very special guest today, Dr. John Berardi. Dr. Berardi is the founder of Science Link Incorporated. He's also the president. And he's published over 200 articles, including scientific and popular press, and over a dozen textbook chapters, 4 books. He earned his doctorate degree at the University of Western Ontario, and he's currently an adjunct professor at University of Texas at Austin. He arranges the performance nutrition at the Canadian National Cross Country Ski Team. And JB, thank you very much for coming on.
I'm kind of disappointed because I don't get to introduce anyone myself. But I'll get over my disappointment and we'll just get into some cool topics, I guess.
Very cool. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Definitely. Thanks, JB.
Yeah, well, I'm doing this call right now from Toronto. Right around the time you moved, Johnny, to Colorado, I was actually offered a couple really cool positions leading up to the Olympics. And so a couple of offers I couldn't refuse, so I took them, splitting my time now between Toronto and Austin. So I actually still have my place in Austin, but I'm back in Toronto for a good chunk of the year, doing some of the work with the Olympic teams and stuff.
That's great.
Yeah. I you had mentioned my work with the cross-country ski team, and I actually, I've been hired on to a number of different Olympic programs here in Canada within the last few months, probably within the last 8 months. I started working with Alpine leading up to the Olympics. I also have been working on the summer sports side of things with the canoe and kayak team, who's Canada's top performing summer sport team. So it's actually been pretty fun lately, running back and forth between where the canoe kayak team trains and where cross country trains and where Alpine trains and stuff like that. And so it's been pretty fun lately.
That sounds awesome. And you sent me some pictures of your new home. I'm dying to get up to Toronto and visit you guys up there.
Yeah, for the fans of Gourmet Nutrition, they're going to be happy when you come for your visit too, because we're having a little meeting about doing some updates to the Gourmet Nutrition brand, coming out with some new recipes, coming out with a really slick-looking hard copy book. And for those John Williams fans, we may even be doing a cooking show.
Very nice. That's a good teaser. We'll get into that later in the round table.
That sounds
very
awesome.
Cool. Well,
yeah, speaking of cooking, you guys drinking your shakes now or what?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
This is one of the new segments on our show. We're reviewing our shakes, and this week all three of us concocted some special shake, and let's go ahead and give some reviews. JB, what are you drinking?
Okay. Well, actually, I was out in Victoria, BC, doing a seminar about a week ago, and one of the seminar attendees, actually, we had a little party afterwards. There were about 25 people at the party. And he's a professional chef. The guy's awesome. So we shared a bunch of recipes and stuff like that. And he actually taught me a couple of cool additions to sort of the super shake that I always write about on my site at johnberardi.com or, through Precision Nutrition. And most people are using sort of like fruit and sweet protein powders to make their shakes, but what I decided to do is go virtually supplement free and just go all sort of whole food. And so today's shake recipe actually contains some sweet stuff as well as some veggies and quote unquote bitter stuff. And I'll teach you a little trick too for making it work. So what I did was I used a cup of cottage cheese. I get the lactose free kind. I actually included a quarter of a beet, a cup of spinach, a half an apple, a whole orange, A half serving of Greens Plus, so that's the only supplement addition. A tablespoon of flax seeds, and ground up, and a half an avocado.
Holy cow. That's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, it's full of veggie and fruit goodness.
So how's it taste?
Oh, it tastes awesome. It's it takes a little bit of, when you want to add fruits and veggies and stuff together, to make it taste good, you sort of have to find the right combination of sweetness and the bitterness, because spinach is a little bit bitter on its own, but beets have that sort of natural sweetness to them that sort of counters that. And the apple and orange kicks in the nice flavor too. And one cool thing is that when you make your super shakes with fruits and vegetables, you know how sometimes they can get a little chunky and a little bit kind of separated in terms of like the different fibers and stuff like that? Actually, if you use avocado, it helps to emulsify the whole thing, so it makes a much creamier shake.
Right. Yeah. You and I were talking about that a while back, you know, how we need to make a shake with an avocado in it. So I'm glad to see you successfully did it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it tastes pretty good, you know. The thing is, for people who are trying the super shake, obviously, like, the whole concept behind the super shake is to get a drink sort of that would be qualified as a really good meal replacement. So it's real quick to make, real easy to make, but it has good quality protein, a bunch of fruits and vegetables, good fiber, stuff like that. So, I mean, this one pretty much meets the bill. It's about 32 grams of protein from the cottage cheese. You've got fruits and veggies in there. You've got your fiber from your flax seeds and your Greens Plus and from all the fruits and veggies as well. You've got good fats from the avocado and the flax. So you're sort of, you know, rounding out what I consider is a really good meal. So antioxidants, micronutrients, protein, good fats, fiber, all in a little convenient shake. So it tastes pretty good. The thing is, when you add veggies to super shakes, it's almost an acquired taste, because the first time you're expecting a sweet shake, because that's what everyone always drinks, sweet shakes, right? So you're like, well, it's not quite as sweet as I thought it might be. Or it's kind of a weird sensation when you first taste it, but seriously, when you're halfway through the glass, you're like, oh, this is wicked. And then everyone after that, you're like, oh yeah, this is good stuff with the veggies.
Do you need like some sort of super blender to mix those together? What are you using?
No, I've just got like a standard kind of Black & Decker, you know, blender that I got at Costco. So,
oh, very cool.
It's nothing special. You make a lot of shakes too, and you use your blender for cooking. I have to replace my blender every so often.
Oh yeah.
Times a year. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. I get the $30 one, you know, at Target or Costco, and as long as it has enough horsepower to chop ice, it's all good.
Yeah, or frozen fruits or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nothing super high powered or fancy.
Well, that is an awesome shake, and it definitely deserves the title of Super Shake. I'm going to be trying that one soon.
So what are you guys drinking?
Kevin, why don't you go?
Well, I actually am drinking a post-workout shake because I was able to get in a bodyweight workout before our FitCast today. And I picked out the strawberry banana shake, which I actually haven't tried before from Gourmet Nutrition. And I haven't tried it because I really haven't usually post-workout. I'm usually just throwing in some Gatorade and whey because I'm on the run and I just don't have the time to blend it. But I actually found that this didn't take much time at all, and I'm probably going to use this in the future.
Nice.
And it's just banana, strawberries, skim milk. I had some strawberry whey that I actually never use. I've had it for about 3 months, and I just never use it because I can't really stand the taste of the whey in just something like water.
Yeah.
And I added some extra ice. It says just a cup of ice, but I actually added, I think, an extra 3 or 4 cubes because I like the thick shake, and I didn't even need the Splenda. And it was awesome. And I actually drank about 3/4 of it before the show started because I really wanted it, and it tastes so damn good.
I couldn't stop myself.
I couldn't, and it was great, and I was able to actually get in. Actually, a couple of seconds ago, I had some capsules of Greens Plus.
Nice.
Because it's nice now that I actually don't have to put the Greens Plus in a shake.
Yeah. Some people just don't like the texture or the taste that it imparts. Now, I mean, the one thing is, if you're in Canada like me and you can get the Canadian Greens Plus, Theirs is awesome because they have a whole bunch of wicked tasting flavors. They have like a coffee flavor. They have a tea flavor. They have berry, tangerine, watermelon.
Nice.
In the U.S., you pretty much get lawn clipping flavor.
Why is Canada flavor so much more advanced? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's the first time ever.
Is the berry flavor pretty much the same? Same ingredients?
Yeah. They use stevia, which you guys probably know. I don't know if all the listeners do. Is sort of a more natural sort of flavoring, sweetening ingredient. And they just use it's all natural flavor. So
very cool.
I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's really good. It's hard to get or find in the U.S. I think that the U.S. company did just release a berry flavor, but I'm not really sure. I haven't been down the States for a little while.
I saw it at Vitamin Shop the other day, so if you got a Vitamin Shop around you, they should have them.
Yeah, cool.
That sounds good. And my shake I whipped up before the show is also from Gourmet Nutrition, and it's one of the more popular ones, the chocolate peanut butter shake.
Nice.
And it's an anytime shake since I haven't worked out yet today. And I think it's popular because it's the harmony of chocolate and peanut butter. And also it's pretty simple to make. If any of you have used Carb Countdown, they have a chocolate milk flavored beverage, and Carb Countdown just takes some of the carbs out of milk and adds some protein. So that's one cup of that, and you add half a cup of 2% cottage cheese or low-fat cottage cheese, a couple of tablespoons of peanut butter, cup and a half or 2 cups of ice, and then Splenda or Stevia, whichever one you want to sweeten it to your taste. And, it's good. It's like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Nice. The taste harmony.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's always good stuff when you mix chocolate and peanut butter. So, yeah,
that's one thing you can't find up here in Canada, Carb Countdown.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, I tried to make my own Carb Countdown before just by using skim milk and adding some protein powder, and it was not so good. So, you know, it would work in a pinch, but I prefer the Carb Countdown for sure.
Yeah, it's good. It's definitely good stuff. I get hate mail from our Canadian gourmet nutrition customers all the time. Because they can't find it. Also overseas as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Everyone's mad because like it's like the promised land that they can't find their way to. You know, they're like, oh, I really want this Carb Countdown. Why have you teased me? I prefer to remain ignorant.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Well, cool. Kevin, you want to kick us off with the news?
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. All right, the first article this week has two parts. The second part came out this week, and it's on the Dave Tate Project, which you can find on tnation.com. And it's actually by the guy that we have on the show this week, John Berardi.
Yeah, that's me.
Go figure. And this article, if you haven't checked it out already, is actually about the transformation of Dave Tate, who was a powerlifter, and he was looking to go towards a healthier weight for reasons being of health and also some injuries. And with the help of JB, Tate went from 296 pounds on February 20th to 272 on April 23rd, so just over 2 months. And Dave kind of was a special case, as JB said, as he physically could not eat clean, which I look forward to listening about. And if he did, he'd find himself vomiting and having diarrhea.
Nice. I knew you'd work diarrhea into this somehow.
Well, I was thinking explosive diarrhea because he said his ass was burning, but that's what I think of when I think of...
Oh, that's just not a pleasant visual.
This is a great article, by the way, JB. I love all the emails you inserted into the article from Dave himself.
Yeah, well, it's actually funny because Dave, ever since we started the quote-unquote project... Dave and I have been keeping a very frequent email correspondence, and literally I have 100+ emails sitting in a little special Dave Tate folder in my Microsoft Outlook called the Dear Dr. John letters. And maybe like posthumously or something, I'll publish them as a tribute. But it's awesome because literally Dave keeps these like daily journals. And I think they're awesome for a couple of reasons. One, most of them are really like gut-splitting funny. Two, he talks about like just family life, about business, all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, for those who don't know and who just read this article and get introduced to Dave through there, will think he's sort of like this big, you know, kind of junk food eating guy who, you know, we got into shape. But seriously, Dave is one of the most successful business people in the fitness industry right now. His site, Elite Fitness Systems, is just, I mean, they outfit hundreds of NCAA teams, professional teams, their weight training facilities. I mean, they sell equipment. He's an awesome businessman, and just everyone always goes to him to like learn about how to bench press more weight. And that's, I mean, he can certainly teach people how to do that, but the guy's just a wealth of business information. He's got awesome perspective on life. So the Dear Dr. John letters have sort of taken on a whole life of their own. So I only gave people a little taste in the article series of what some of those might have been like. But seriously, like reading through these, I mean, if I were to put them together, I'd have like a 150-page Microsoft Word document at 12-point font. You know what I mean? So there's just a lot of gems in there.
Maybe you could edit those and publish an entirely different article out of them.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of doing eventually once we sort of reach our goal and in terms of Dave's body fat percentage. And I mean, and we're close to there. I mean, like you said, we started out, you know, 296 pounds or something like that, and Dave was close to about 20% body fat. And he's around 10% now, and like I've got, I mean, he sends me these pictures, which he dreads doing, you know, because he's been in this powerlifting world for a while, and they have always considered, you know, like physique photos and stuff like that borderline gay, you know what I mean? So now he's sending me these pictures every couple of weeks, and I know he dreads it, but I've got pictures of him like, you know, doing the, hey, check out my abs, like pulling up the shirt, and his abs are ripped now. The guy looks awesome, but I mean, even more important than aesthetics, you know, the blood changes that have occurred and the lifestyle changes that have occurred and, you know, changes in energy levels and stuff like that have been tremendous. Because, I mean, going back, for those who haven't checked out the article, we're talking about a guy who was eating about 10,500 calories a day, 90% of it from fast food joints. So, I mean, it's hard for the average person to put that into perspective. You know, I think you guys would probably agree, but...
Absolutely.
This guy would get like two Big Macs, like the super sized Coke, two fries, and three apple pies, and that would be a meal, and then he'd eat another similar one 3 hours later. And, you know, in some of the Dear Dr. John letters, it was hilarious because he'd be like, ah, yeah, I'm sitting here typing this, and I'm eating an entire tray of cinnamon buns, like the Cinnabon kind. Like he'd polish off eight of them with like a quart of milk, you know? It's like, oh, buddy. So, I mean, he was taking in about something like 1,600 or 1,800 grams of carbohydrates a day. Mm-hmm. You know, I think 500 grams of fat. It was just, I mean, these are numbers. Some people don't get this amount of energy in a week, let alone a day, you know?
Well, you detailed his pre-John Berardi diet in your first article.
Yeah.
And let me go over it real quick right here to give some of our listeners an idea.
laugh, I guess.
Yeah. So 5 o'clock a.m., Dave Tate would wake up. He ate 4 Pop-Tarts and drank 3 cups of coffee. This is an actual, I guess, one of his diary entries that he sent to you. 5 to 7 a.m., he worked, answered emails. 7:10 a.m., his pre-workout meal was McDonald's number 5 meal with 2 apple pies and a large coffee.
Yep.
He would train while drinking a cup of coffee during the session. Then the post-workout drink at 8:30 a.m. was 2 Ultra Fuels.
Which are carb drinks that have 100 grams of carbs in each drink.
Right, 2 of them.
It's like syrup. It's more like syrup than Gatorade, that's for sure.
And then 8:30 to noon, he was working at the gym, answering emails. 1 o'clock, he went home. Let's see, on the way home, he ate a Burger King chicken sandwich with extra mayo. He says he hates chicken breasts, and he'll only eat the breaded stuff. So he also ate onion rings and a Snickers pie and drank a Dr. Pepper along with the meal. 1 to 5, presentation and napping. Also ate 5 lunch-sized bags of chips, 6 mini Snickers, couple of Disney fruit snacks from his kids. 5 to 6 p.m., he made dinner. Let's see. Popped 4 hot dogs in a microwave, ate all 4 of them on pieces of whole wheat bread with ketchup. Also had 3 lunch bags of chips and 3 glasses of sugar-free Tang. And this is at 6 o'clock p.m. already. So 7 o'clock, put the kids to bed, get hungry again, fired up the oven and cooked 6 giant cinnamon rolls with icing and a huge glass of milk. And by bedtime at 11, he was hungry again, so he ate 4 Pop-Tarts and a big glass of milk. So, I mean, my God, that's a whole boatload of seriously bad food. And like you said, JB, it added up to like 11,000 calories for the day.
Yeah, and it's very, very easy for people listening in and people reading the article to kind of wag their finger and be like, oh, well, everybody knows you shouldn't eat crappy like that, and on and on and on. The thing to realize is that Dave is a 300-pound guy, or was when we started working together, whose body sort of weight normal set point would be probably 250. So he simply had to force feed to get enough calories to be as big and strong as he was. And early on, he discovered that it was easier to eat a whole lot of junk food than to try and eat clean throughout the process, because when you eat clean, you get full. You have a much higher satiety from eating like a chicken breast and a salad and some whole wheat pasta versus 6 cinnamon rolls and milk. You're just way fuller on the first one, and you only got about 500 calories, where with the cinnamon rolls you got 2,000. So I mean, this guy was eating for a specific objective, which was gaining a lot of size, having a lot of calories to recover from his workouts. And the reason why his heart hadn't exploded already was the fact that the guy trains probably 2 or 3 hours a day, 6 days a week. So he could sort of quote-unquote get away with it from at least a physique and a performance perspective. But there was definitely some suffering going on internally that we had to deal with and fix up. So it's funny because whenever we detail stories like this, it's sort of sensationalized, and people get all smug in their own habits, and they're like, well, I'm doing better than that, so I must be doing great myself. I don't need advice, And it's probably not true. There's this huge gap between what we do and what we say we do. There's actually a study published a couple of years back where they actually had people do food records. So they sort of wrote down what they ate for the last 3 days, sort of as a retrospective kind of analysis. And then they actually had recorded what the people actually did eat. And what ended up happening was they always overestimated the good food that they ate when they did their food record, and they always underestimated the bad food that they ate. So when it came down to writing down how many servings of fruits and vegetables they had, they were approximating that they got 5 a day, when in actuality it was like 0.8. And when they were writing down how much protein they were getting, they would record 4 servings a day but only get 2. But when it came to carbs, they would say they had 3 servings but they got 7. You know what I mean? So what people think they're doing and what they're actually doing, seems to be a gap. And another couple of stats that I always love is, when North Americans are surveyed for just one simple indicator of quality of nutritional intake, fruit and vegetables, only 1 to 5% of the population is even getting 3 to 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Yet when they ask the population the question, hey, do you think your nutrition needs improvement? Only 22% of the people say they think it does. So we've got 78% of the population thinking, oh, I'm doing great, and only 1 to 5% are actually even getting enough fruits and veggies.
So do French fries count as a veggie?
they do, sadly, but not on my list, I guess. the stats show that over 50% of the vegetables that North Americans get come from 3 sources. Can you guys guess what they are?
Corn.
Nope, that's not one.
Potatoes.
Potatoes, yeah. What are the other two? Any guesses?
Vegetables?
Yeah, vegetable-wise.
Yeah, but tomatoes, probably.
Tomato, yep, canned tomatoes.
Carrots?
No, the last one's iceberg lettuce.
Ooh, so, healthy.
10% of the North American vegetable intake is iceberg lettuce, tomato, and potatoes. If you think about what a burger and fries comes with, that's pretty much it right there.
Exactly, right.
They're getting the hamburger, they're getting the shredded lettuce, they're getting the soggy, sad-looking tomato, and they're getting fried potatoes. And that's sort of the bulk of the vitamin and mineral intake for fruit and veggies anyway, which is pretty sad.
It is sad. And, you know, I think there's two sides of the coin to reading Dave Tate's pre-JB diet. On the one side, you know, it is easy to look at it and be like, oh, God, you know, my diet's so much better. On the other hand, I even saw this on some of the forums, you know, people were like, well, you know, Dave Tate's a huge dude. I wouldn't mind looking like Dave Tate, so I can eat just like him. And, you know, I think it's important to sort of stress that Dave Tate is, you know, he's got a great physique because he works out probably more than any of us do, and or at least with more intensity. And it's even with his superior genetics and the way he works out, it was even starting to get to him. If you look at his sort of blood stats that you listed in your article, JB.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I try not to read too much into the interpretation of this, because as someone who works with individuals with training and nutrition on a daily basis, every person's individual, you know? So, you know, some people will get all smug and be like, oh, well, I'm eating better than that, but they'll have more body fat than Dave Tate had to start with. And that one always cracks me up. People who are 25% body fat going, oh, that dude's a pig.
Yeah.
He started out at 19% body fat, leaner than you. So in your smugness, maybe you need to turn the mirror back on yourself and figure out maybe where you could improve rather than making it relative to some dude. The other thing is, like you said, you know, the people who are like, oh, all right, well, maybe I can get away with that. Well, the point is, I mean, is this like the old psychological test done on children where we reality test, see how much we can get away with before we get in trouble? You know what I mean? That's sort of, in my opinion, not the best way to do it when you're flirting with your, you know, health and disease. So the idea is, you know, maybe you need to eat a ton of calories for your sport. And I think most people I ever encounter are grossly under-eating. What they're doing fundamentally is overeating on the wrong things, under-eating on the right things. And so they're under-eating for their training goals. So if they were to bump up their calorie intake, it probably would help them. And that's why they're stagnant. But they have to do it not probably from lots of cinnamon rolls. You know
right.
What I mean?
Well, JB, why don't you give us a rundown of what you did to fix Dave Tate's diet?
Well, you know, like you said, like Kevin said, the one problem and the reason why Dave contacted me, the guy is a minor in nutrition. He knows how to eat, you know. Most people know that how he was eating was probably not optimal for health. But the problem was every time he said he tried to eat clean, the explosive diarrhea and the vomiting thing, he would get sick. So that sort of indicated to me that there were some issues going on with gastrointestinal health, to put it mildly, and also that he was just choosing, you know, when you looked at what he was choosing, it was crappy, bland foods, like he would have chicken breast and a plain salad, you know, and that's sort of, I mean, John, you appreciate this very well. That's why we wrote Gourmet Nutrition, because we got sick of seeing people like us, kind of guys and girls hitting the gym, being sort of committed to a healthy and fit lifestyle, eating just this miserable food, you know?
So absolutely.
Like, you know, let's make this, let's show them it can taste good. So that was one of those were a couple of things. We wanted to get at fixing Dave's GI health. We wanted to get at giving him some better food choices. And also just get at a diet that would actually preserve his muscle mass. Because if he saw his muscle mass declining over time, he would have bailed and went back to what he was doing before. You know what I mean? Because that's sort of another priority to him. So if he were to rank his priorities, I think that health and muscle mass would sort of tie for number one. Mm-hmm. And if muscle mass was diminishing, health would sort of take a second, you know, sort of a back seat. So we wanted to do some things like that. And I detail the plan in the Dave Tate Project Part 2. So his training program is detailed, his nutrition program is detailed, his supplement program. I pretty much laid it on the line. Dave was like, oh man, are you sure you want to really tell everyone all the secrets? And I said, nah, you know what? There's actually, this doesn't give anything away, because this is the set of variables that we had to do to improve Dave. And, you know, every other person is going to have something unique. I always say that different people have different limiting factors to success. So your limiting factors may be very different from Dave's, and so you're going to need a whole different approach. And that's the whole idea. So I wasn't afraid to give away, quote unquote, the secrets, because if someone else tried exactly what Dave's doing, it might not work at all.
I don't think, you know, I definitely couldn't even eat. What was his sweet spot? 5,100 calories per day.
Yeah, we found that about 5,100, he was losing body fat at a good, healthy, maintainable rate, and he wasn't like hungry all the time or losing energy, which is
right.
Hilarious, right? Because 5,100 is like
massive.
What you would use to bulk up.
Yeah. Well. How many weeks was he on this project so far when you wrote the second article?
Yeah, when the second article came out, it was 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. We're continuing on. We're about 11 weeks into it, and he's just getting leaner. In about 8 weeks, dropped about 25 pounds of body fat.
And there was a significant increase in the blood work results. It showed a 7% reduction in cholesterol, a 50% reduction in triglycerides,
an
88% increase in good cholesterol, and a 4% reduction in bad. So that's awesome results for 8 weeks.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. Actually, Dave was a little disappointed because although his HDLs went up huge and his triglycerides went down in a very big way, his total cholesterol didn't drop as much as he had hoped, and his LDL didn't increase, the bad cholesterol didn't increase as much as he had hoped. And what we came to find out at that point was that Dave was skipping a lot of his supplements. Because for some reason, he just hates, he hates taking pills, which is just an odd aversion, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, he's been taking them, and we've got some blood test results coming up, and I expect all the numbers are going to be just huge improvements. And this is where sort of the average person who's listening in can take a lesson from this, because, you know, they might be thinking, well, I'm not a power lifter. I don't eat 10,000 calories, nor can I even eat 5,000. So what the hell's the point? Why am I even listening to this? Well, the point is that, like I said earlier, different people have different limiting factors, and you can learn something from Dave if your limiting factors are the same. But the other thing is, there's a lot of individuals who, you know, aren't 300 pounds who have some wacky blood chemistry going on, you know. And nowadays, it seems like every third person has high cholesterol or, sort of a pre-diabetic condition or a bad ratio of HDL to LDL. And some of the nutritional strategies that we outline in Gourmet Nutrition and Precision Nutrition, the stuff that I did with Dave, rapidly changes things. I mean, over on our Precision Nutrition forums, we've got a whole thread devoted to people changing their blood chemistry within a month on Precision Nutrition. And, I mean, there's no huge secrets to it. It's just there's certain things that you should be eating at certain times, and there's certain things you shouldn't be eating. And if you're consistent to do that, then these blood chemistry things fall right in line. You know, the old, oh, well, it's hereditary, and, you know, my dad had high cholesterol, so I will too. Well, you also learn how to eat from your dad, you know what I mean? And it might not be completely genetics. It might be a function of what you're choosing to put in your mouth every day.
And probably what's even more important about the Precision Nutrition Plan is that you're right. Most of it's not a secret to anyone, but the plan gives you a strategy for doing so, and one that's easy to do. You know, most people, they try to start eating clean, and like you said earlier, JB, it turns into chicken breasts and whatever, can of tuna.
This actually brings up the, maybe we want to do this later, but Kevin, you had a question from a reader that sort of is right along these lines, isn't it?
Yeah, we might as well bring it up now. That question was, for many of us that already feel that we eat healthy compared to the average Joe, we eat whole grains, lean meats, no regular sodas, and pop a few vitamins and fish oil caps per day. We already minimize junk foods like fries, cookies, candy. What are some of the things we can change that would give us the biggest bang for our dietary buck?
Okay. It's a great question because I face this all the time. People come in, it's sort of that old questionnaire that we talked about earlier, right? Where only 22% of the population thinks they need to improve their nutritional intake. I mean, anyone who knows anything about health and the statistics of disease risks has to know that that's laughable, you know? And I just face a ton of people every day who say, oh, yeah, my nutrition's really good, you know? And then you actually break it down, and it's not really good. What's the measuring stick for goodness? Well, certainly it's how your body looks and feels and performs and what your blood work looks like. That's one way to determine the goodness of your nutritional intake. But the other sort of big thing is this, and I always present this to my athletes when I first meet with them. It's, you know, nowadays when people think about good nutrition, they think of eliminating or avoiding junk food, right? And so even in the question, it was like, well, we avoid sugars and pops and things like that. So, I mean, aren't we cool?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is, I mean, any second grader knows that you need to not eat junk food. And
exactly.
So if your whole logic behind your nutritional plan is not to eat junk food, well, congratulations, you've got a second grade version of what healthy nutrition is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what I try and do is try and bring people up, at least up until a high school version, or maybe even a college version, or maybe even a graduate degree version. You know, so I mean, the most primitive idea behind good nutrition is the idea of avoiding junk food, right? I mean, come on. So getting into what may be sort of a higher advanced level thinking, and I break it down into three things. One is the how much to eat of good nutrition, which is total calorie intake. You got to figure that out. As we get older, in particular, our body's regulatory mechanisms for balancing energy intake and energy output get thrown off. When we're young, there's a really good balance between how much we eat and how much we burn, so that our body naturally regulates both. So our energy expenditure regulates how much we're eating, and our intake regulates how much we do and how much we burn. That sort of uncouples as we get older. It dissociates, and that's why there's this progressive weight gain that happens with people. What we need to do as we get older, particularly, is make sure that we're doing that balancing and that coupling ourselves. Okay, it's almost like the sort of the autopilot shuts off when we hit a certain age. It's usually like around our 30s. And once that autopilot shuts off, we need to take the controls. And if we don't, that's when we get bodies that we don't want. So we need to. So the first thing of good nutrition is calorie intake, or how much to eat. The next one is what to eat, food selections. So that sort of speaks to the McDonald's thing, or the avoidance of junk food thing. It's a little more advanced than just avoiding junk food. It's what are we selecting? What are our positive choices? What are the good things that we're eating? And then the last thing is nutrient timing. It's sort of the when to eat. And I think this one is often grossly overlooked because it's often inconvenient. All right? You can choose the right foods. You can balance your calorie intake with an approximation from Fit Day or from whatever the site you're using is to look at how much you're burning and how much you're taking in. But the nutrient timing thing is a little bit harder, because you have to give up carbs when you like them, okay? And so I'll give you a little example of what the number one thing is I found with clients. When I do this, their bodies change dramatically. It's take the carbohydrates that they're eating, even if they're good carbohydrates, and put them in during and after, so within the 3 hours after exercise. So all their starchy carbs come during and within the 3 hours after exercise. The rest of the day, all the carbs come from primarily vegetables with some fruit thrown in. When people do that, and then obviously rounding out their nutritional intake with, you know, good proteins and good fats. When people do that, their bodies change pretty dramatically. The problem, though, is that, you know, the average recreational exerciser only works out 3 or 4 times a week, and that means they only have 3 or 4 3-hour segments where they can get in all their starchy carbs. Well, they don't like that. That sucks, because they like to get their carbies for breakfast. You know what I mean? Or they like to have a nice pasta with dinner. And so then they think they can compromise on the nutrient timing rules and they'll be fine. And then they use other people to justify it. Well, I know a guy who's lean and he eats carbs whenever he wants, so Berardi must be a crackpot. The reality is that's nice, but you're not that guy because you're 20% body fat and you're wondering what the secret is that you don't have to that you can do so you don't have to follow what I've suggested. And that's fine. You know what I mean? So, I mean, certainly I'm not coming down on the particular person who asked this question, not by any means. But I think that for the person who eats pretty clean, who feels like they're eating pretty clean, I would look to calorie intake. So make sure that you're getting enough calories, or if you're trying to lose fat, that you're taking in few enough. And then, you know, your food selections obviously are set. If you're eating whole grain pastas, lots of fruits and vegetables, good proteins, good fats. And then the last thing is nutrient timing. If you're having trouble with body composition, you want to eat most of your carbs within a few hours after exercise. If you haven't worked out, what do you eat? I get that question all the time. And I think it's because people want me to say oatmeal or something. And the answer is fruits and vegetables and good protein and fats. You know, and I mean, there's not much to lose to give this a try. Your health will only improve if you're forcing in more fruits and vegetables. Your body comp will likely improve as well. You're not going to lose muscle because you're taking in plenty of protein. And so there's, I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons for doing it. The only caveat is for those kind of ectomorphic type people who have a hard time gaining muscle mass, those are the individuals who may need to sort of break the carb rules a little bit by putting some carbs in throughout the rest of the day. So that's long-winded. As you can tell from the call so far, I'm quite a talker, but...
Well, it's all great information for sure, and I think that also covers another question that people were putting on the JP Fitness Forum. This one was from Ed Chapp in London. He said, could you ask Dr. Berardi how much emphasis he puts behind the nutrient timing? And he just did a great job of explaining all that as well. It is important, particularly, yeah. But it's individualized too. And like you said, ectomorphic body types like myself sometimes need to get in carbohydrates at other times of the day outside of the workout window. And you know, every morning, even though I work out at lunch, every morning I have a bowl of oatmeal with blueberries and the egg white omelet. Yeah. And I, you know, I need that to keep my weight up. So it's very much individualized.
Right, exactly. I know. You know, the reality is it sucks. Like if you have the body type that doesn't respond well to carbs, it sucks because you want to eat some oatmeal and they're clean and they're good for you. But, and they taste good if you put some, you know, whatever, berries in or you flavor it nicely. But the reality is it's just not doing you any body comp favors, and you can't get around that. If you have a certain body type, it's just what you have to deal with. You know what I mean? The other thing that I think is important in this whole equation is, you know, people don't try and eat better just for the sake of eating better as an end. They do it for some other outcome that they want to achieve. Whether it's to improve their blood profiles, whether it's to improve their body comp, whether it's to improve their performance. There's very few people who just eat better just because they think that it'll make them a better person or something. You know, they want to feel better. They want to look better. There's always an outcome associated with that. And I always feel that sort of necessary to lay down the line and say, look, you know, people who ask these questions a lot are sort of dreaming of the ultimate body, whether it's the cover of Men's Health or Women's Health or whatever the case may be. And you can follow all of the nutritional advice that I give, but if you're not training enough, you're not going to get that type of body. It's really, really simple. People argue with me all the time. Well, I mean, I got a real life. I got a job. I got a family. I can only work out 3 days a week. What should I do nutritionally to make sure that I have this body that I'm looking for? And sometimes the answer is there's absolutely nothing you can do to look like the cover of Men's Health when you work out for a maximum of 3 hours a week. You know what I mean? It's just impossible. Everyone that has these stellar bodies that everyone's dreaming of works out more than that. So, I mean, I hate to be this guy who's like, you know, injecting the hard line dose of reality, but that's the truth. You know, now I'm not saying you got to exercise 25 hours a week, but what I am saying is that the people with the best bodies don't just piddle around in the gym for a couple of hours. They work out hard. They work out with a reasonable amount of volume. They eat properly. They get all the variables together.
JB, if I take Greens Plus, will it give me ripped abs?
Yeah, that was your question on the JP forum, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Spelled appropriate to the person who wants ripped ABZ.
Oh, well, absolutely. All good information.
Yeah, so anyway, that's sort of my it's my rant of the day, I guess.
Well, that's awesome. Why don't we just move on into the articles I was going to cover, and since you covered so much already, I'll just give them a really brief sort of overview and get your guys' opinion on them. And I wanted to talk about these articles because they're nice segues from the Dave Tate Project, because each of these are covering particular supplements, JB, that you gave Dave Tate to take, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the articles is talking about Greens Plus. Well, the article's not talking about Greens Plus, but Greens Plus is the supplement that you gave to Dave Tate, which has some of these ingredients. And it's a specially formulated supplement that offers sort of a mixture of vitamins and minerals and enzymes and trace minerals, essential amino acids, and all kinds of good stuff. And basically it can be used to increase your veggie and your veggie intake.
Yeah.
So one of these articles deals with the spirulina. Read it, never said it, so sorry if I mispronounce it.
Yeah.
It's entitled "Spirulina may boost immune response," and basically it's revealing that the results of the study from UC Davis School of Medicine and Medical Center, where they collected blood samples from 12 healthy volunteers and then put in a bunch of nasty stuff into these blood samples.
Yeah.
So what they showed is that when they put the nasty stuff into blood samples and they add spirulina, that it has sort of this strong proponent for protecting against pathogens and parasites.
Right.
And there's the phone.
Yes, it happened.
Nice. Oh, geez.
Is that you, John, or is that JB?
That's Williams.
That's Williams again, the third time in a row. You know, this is going to become a regular segment in our show.
Williams? Yeah, John Williams is the guy who leaves his cell phone on during, like, the symphony. You know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I love Beethoven, but you got to make sure, you know, I'm connected with all my friends
exactly.
All the time.
Yeah.
It's funny, though. I was going to try to protect against this time, so I actually unplugged my phone, but my girlfriend Sarah just came in and her cell phone started ringing. So it's like...
So it's Sarah's fault again.
It is Sarah's fault. She's the one who called it last time. And actually, this week, I was going to like try to play a joke on you guys, and I was going to try to get Lou Schuler to call me on my phone at some appropriate time during our show, and I'd be like, oh, who's this? And Lou would be like, I have a question for JB. So maybe we can make this a regular segment.
Nice.
Anyhow, so it's spirulina. Anyway, they mixed this stuff in their blood, added some spirulina, and it showed that it protected against some sort of allergic reactions, as well as it was a strong proponent for protecting against pathogens and parasites. So to make a long story short, spirulina, one of the most predominant ingredients in Greens Plus, protects against, you know, getting sick, basically.
Yeah, it's I've been talking about Greens Plus a lot lately, and I'll give people a clue as to why. Basically, a year and a half ago, I was contacted by the company directly, and they just said, you know, hey, we know that you do nutrition for all these teams, and that you're a big proponent of healthy eating, and we'd like to show you some data that was recently collected at the University of Toronto. And at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, great, another green foods product. I had some skepticism about anything that used to be a vegetable and then was ground up and made into some weird powder. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, I can't offer the benefits of real food and whatever. And, you know, it's not cheap, so whatever. I'll take a look at your silly data. You know what I mean? Real skeptical about it, but their data wasn't silly at all. I mean, they have... One a really preeminent senior researcher at the University of Toronto that they occasionally work with, his name's Venkat Rao, and I met this guy recently. And you know, John, you'd appreciate this being in academia. We walk in, or I walk into a little research meeting that they're having, and I'm sort of the new guy, so everyone asks me to sort of, you know, brag a little about myself, tell people what I do, and some of my highlights. And so after I do this, then this Venkat Rao gets the opportunity to do the same. So he's following up right after me. And Venkat starts off with the fact that he's been at the University of Toronto for 50 years. He's been a professor for 50 years, right? So I'm blown away because the guy doesn't look that old. You know, he must be 75 years old to have been a professor for 50 years. So anyway, I'm blown away by that. He's also the guy who did all the first research on lycopene, which is, as you guys know, a predominant chemical in tomatoes, mm-hmm. which has some, you know, reduces prostate cancer risk in men. Like, he's the guy who started researching lycopene, you know, which is just huge. So anyway, it was kind of funny. You know, he starts telling his greatest hits, 50 years of them, and I felt kind of small after that. But anyway, he's the guy who's done a bunch of this research. And, I mean, he's done a number of studies, one showing that Greens Plus boosts antioxidant capacity of the blood and of the cells, reduces oxidative damage markers. So when those nasty free radicals come in and start tearing up DNA and other cellular tissues, Greens Plus reduces the markers of that damage. His wife actually is a professor at UT. They're an interesting family. I think he has three daughters. All of them have PhDs as well.
Jeez.
They're like a five PhD family. his wife does bone research. And one of the most interesting natural product studies recently was she did an in vitro study. So this is in sort of a dish with human bone cultures. Found that when the Greens Plus formula was included, it actually increased osteoblast activity, which is the bone building activity of the bones, which not even the drugs on the market nowadays to combat osteoporosis increase osteoblasts. They just prevent osteoclasts from working, which are the things that break down bone. So it's actually a pretty wild study, and so they're following up in humans right now. And then there was another study done where Greens Plus improved global markers of health and well-being. So they just gave it to people for X amount of months and measured some health blood chemistry stuff and some subjective markers and showed some positive things there. So when I actually looked at the research and it was done really well, I became pretty intrigued. You know, I mean, these are credible researchers who are doing some projects on this and other similar, you know, foodstuffs, natural products, and showing some really, really positive effects. So I started even looking more into it. And two huge things nowadays when we look at deficiencies in the North American diet are our intake of antioxidant foods. I mean, we've sort of gotten a little bit antioxidant happy from supplements, but from foods, we've sort of missed the boat. Antioxidant foods act in concert. So they're, I mean, you know, taking vitamin C and E for antioxidants is a really ineffective, inefficient way of trying to get our antioxidants. The other thing is the acid load on the body. And we tend to be very, introduce foods that are very acidic to the body. So when you look at Greens Plus compared to the most basic of foods, because fruits and veggies introduce a huge base load to the body. And for those people interested, there's a website, www.acid-base.de, which outlines all this research, and you can actually calculate the acid-base status of your own diet by plugging in all the foods. It's a really cool, useful site. But the most alkaline or base-producing foods to neutralize all our dietary acids, the top three are spinach, dried figs, and raisins. And the raisins are the highest in terms of their alkalinity. And so they're a minus 0.21 milliequivalents per gram. So per gram of raisins, you get minus 0.21.
I didn't realize raisins were in that group.
Yeah, I mean, that's the number one. Spinach is 0.14, dried figs of 0.18. And these are negative scores because basically what that means is they have negative acidity.
Mm-hmm.
So these, I mean, the biggest food that introduces base are raisins at negative 0.21. That's the highest recorded food. Greens Plus is negative 3.5 per gram.
Holy cow.
So, I mean, we're talking about a huge increase relative to the highest recorded food. So when I saw that, I was like, well, that's pretty wicked, you know, in terms of introducing base to the body. And as a follow-up, I'm actually collaborating with University of Western Ontario, where I did my PhD work, to give Greens Plus to athletes and use magnetic resonance testing to look at ATP levels and acid buffering during exercise. There's a really cool model where you put someone in a big magnet. It's like an MRI where you take a picture, but rather than measuring they're taking a picture, you actually measure substrate in the tissues. And there's an exercise task you can do with forearm flexion. So it's wrist flexors. And you can measure acid-base status of the body. So we're actually doing an interesting study right now looking at whether Greens Plus can buffer acid during exercise. So that's kind of a cool application. And then the other thing, like I said, was the antioxidant. And when we, just go to the foods, the highest antioxidant foods, they measure it. They call it ORAC, so oxygen radical absorptance capacity. So it's how much free radicals the food can soak up. And the ORAC score of prunes is the highest at 57 grams, or 57 ORAC units per gram. So that's the highest recorded food. And Greens Plus is 300 per gram. So sixfold.
That's awesome. And one of the important things about this acidity balance is, you know, some of your recommendations are, by some people's standards, high on protein levels. And protein, you know, actually is an acidic food, which it's a very important to as your plan details, to get plenty of vegetables. And apparently Greens Plus is very good with this acid-base stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome at free radical stuff, acid-base stuff. I mean, I sound like I'm a huge salesperson for the company, and I mean, I don't even get any money to say this. I've just been using it with my athletes and seen some neat things, and then I started digging around, and I saw that, hey, man, this stuff actually can make a huge impact on overall health. And, you know, you mentioned the spirulina, which has some beneficial effects. But, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other stuff in there. I mean, the greens themselves have some real positive effects. There's fiber in there. Two ingredients that I'm really interested in there are the healthy bacteria cultures, the lactobacilli and the bifidobacteria. People, like when we talked about Dave Tate and his gut problems, his gastrointestinal health, gastrointestinal health is something that's far overlooked in the weightlifting and fitness communities. People always talk about gut health, and the popular thing is leaky gut right now. But the problem is that we have a preponderance of things that give us overgrowth of bad bacteria in our gastrointestinal tracts. So adding good bacteria in is almost a necessity for most people. It has the good bacteria that can be introduced.
Did you say leaky gut?
Yeah.
What is that?
it's sort of become the popular name for what happens is there's, and I'll just give you the sort of lay description. There can be an inflammation in the gut, which causes the gastrointestinal tract lining, which sort of is the barrier between things getting from the gut into your bloodstream. Can get these leaks, these little gaps in between the cells. So molecules that would normally be excluded, like pathogens, like microbes, like unbroken down proteins and things like that, so before they're fully digested, can sneak into the body through this quote-unquote leaky gut, causing immune reactions. So it's not like the old Olestra disaster where that's called leaky.
That's what
gut,
I was thinking.
Is that anal leakage?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we call it.
Anal leakage. God.
So leaky gut is where these things that shouldn't be getting in the bloodstream get in through this gut, which is sort of damaged, full of bad bacteria and leaks, quote unquote. So anyway, you know, that
nasty stuff.
Yeah, and that's another sort of advantage of taking in good bacteria. And I mean, you can get it from yogurt that has live bacterial cultures in it. You can take enteric coated supplements that do it. But one of the reasons I like Greens Plus is simply because it gives all the antioxidants and the alkaline load on the body, plus gives you the good bacteria. It's got green tea extract and a bunch of other good stuff. So, I mean, that's, you know, some people have asked, like, what about, you know, one of the other million products on the market that are sort of targeted towards, you know, sort of the green foods category? Well, I mean, many of them are probably quite good. I just don't know if they are or not because there's no published data on them. So the reason I say Greens Plus always rather than a Greens food product is because I know what Greens Plus has in it and I know what it does. And the other greens, I don't. So that's sort of why I lean towards recommending this brand over the others, although maybe the others are good, but it's a crapshoot. Good luck, you know, if you're going to try them.
Well, all the more reason to take some Greens Plus.
Yep.
And you have a couple of articles, don't you, JB, going into yet another supplement that you recommended to Dave Tate.
Which one are you thinking of there?
Oh, the FDA rejects the green tea health claims.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I found this the other day, I think on MSN or whatever. I sent it to you guys. I guess the FDA again rejected an application from the largest manufacturer of green tea in the world for adding the label claim that green tea reduces heart disease risk. Did you guys get to check this out?
Yeah, I did read it.
Initial reactions on it?
Well, it goes against what most of the studies are saying. I was going to pick your brain on this, actually, to see what you think about the claim.
Yeah. Well, what ends up happening, it's really important to understand this, because this is just a classic, I can just see a classic media case of the media sort of thumbing their nose at the general public and being like, ha, you guys for so long, everyone thought green tea was so good. Ha, see, it ain't so good. You know what I mean?
Right.
I actually read some article on the web last night. A strength coach, I think he calls himself the healthy skeptic or the health skeptic or something like that. And his conclusion from the FDA's rejection, which is just a ridiculous one, is that green tea has no health benefits. Also, see, green tea has no health benefits. So all you morons who drink green tea and think you're getting something good out of it, you're not. And
right.
It's like, I'm not really sure why such a virulent bad response would. I mean, I never imagined green tea would react to such a huge, huge response. I mean, it's freaking tea, for God's sake.
How can you hate tea? You got a bunch of haters for green tea.
Exactly. But, I mean, that is the classic knee-jerk reaction to a very specific thing that happened. Here's what happens. When a company, okay, so this particular company who sells most of the green tea worldwide, or at least they sell green tea to the people who create separate brands, approaches the FDA and says, hey, look, there's some mounting evidence that green tea is really good for certain things. We'd like you to review this application, and if you approve it, then we can put on every box of green tea worldwide that it does this specific thing. So a while back, they applied for the permission of the FDA to say that green tea reduces certain cancer risks, and the FDA rejected that. They also recently applied for the FDA to say that it reduces heart disease risk, and they rejected that as well. In the FDA's words, the evidence was mildly supportive of a health-promoting effect, or at least a heart disease reduction, but not conclusive. So the FDA is pretty conservative on this. They don't want you to put something on your food label that says, hey, this reduces heart disease risk, unless there's some really powerful conclusive evidence. And in the end, there's not. I mean, there's some good evidence. There's evidence that green tea does a lot of tremendous things. But specifically, taking green tea only to reduce heart disease risk, probably isn't something people should try and do. So in other words, the FDA is weighing this against them going in and getting medical treatment, right? Because
right.
What'll happen is if it says, well, you know, they put the little heart on the oatmeal, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's heart healthy. And then they put it on the green tea. And then people just start eating oatmeal and drinking green tea to try and fight atherosclerotic buildup and try and recover from a, you know, occluded artery, which probably isn't the best approach. You know what I mean?
Right.
So the FDA is pragmatically balancing things out. And, you know, I think that in the future, it'll probably, green tea will be approved for a few things. So they'll label claims will be able to be made. But right now, they're not. Does this debunk the health benefits of green tea? Hell no. Does it highlight the fact that the green tea is very conservative, or the FDA is very conservative in what they allow people to put on their labels? Yeah. And it also shows that, hey, green tea doesn't make disease go away. It is just a healthy adjunct to an otherwise healthy lifestyle.
Well said, JB.
Yeah. And I mean, just as a little FYI, I mean, there's a couple great reviews published on green tea. And I mean, there's some convincing evidence that the catechins, which are the most sort of active ingredients in green tea, can do a whole bunch of cool things. I mean, decrease fat mass and body weight, decrease fat absorption, decrease triglycerides in the blood, alter glucose tolerance in a positive way. There's actually even some evidence that the most active green tea ingredient, which is EGCG, it's epigallocatechin gallate, which is a mouthful, can even reduce lipogenesis, so the creation of new fats in the body. So there's a ton of good evidence. I think that probably in the future what we'll see with green tea is that some of the extracts, when taken in higher doses, will have a much more powerful effect than, say, drinking a cup of green tea a day. So I've taken to just supplementing with the EGCG in addition to drinking some green tea each day, and that, I think, probably will end up having a better overall effect in the long run.
Where do you get this particular compound?
You can get it online, EGCG, green tea extract, it's called. I actually get mine from the same company that does Greens Plus. The company's called Genuine Health, and they have a product called Abs Plus, which has CLA, which is a specific fat, and a really big dose of this EGCG in it. And again, they have a couple of studies that they've done recently to show decreases in body fat. And even one particularly interesting one is where they gave it to people on antidepressant meds. And I don't know if you guys are aware, but the number one side effect of antidepressants is weight gain. And whenever I have a client come to me who's sort of stuck, or they start my program and they're not getting results within a month or two, it's the first question I ask, are you on antidepressants? One of the most commonly prescribed drugs in North America nowadays, or sort of categories of drug. And undoubtedly, like 80% of the time, the answer is, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so there seems to be this selective abdominal fat gain that comes with antidepressant meds. And what they speculated was that this EGCG would have a pretty powerful effect at minimizing that response. And they actually did. Subjects who were on antidepressants and taking the combination of EGCG and CLA tended to, if they just started therapy, not have any weight gain, and those who had weight gain associated with it reversed their weight gain, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
This is all phenomenal stuff, and this week's episode of FitCast is brought to you by Greens Plus. I kid. No, I'm biased. This is good stuff, though.
Yeah, the other thing with respect to the green tea I wanted to mention is, you don't necessarily have to go out and get EGCG. Have you heard of matcha? Matcha green tea? Either of you?
No, I haven't.
It's called MATCHA, and it's harvested a little differently than regular green tea. And Science News Online just published an article, and there's actually a couple articles on PubMed as well, showing that matcha green tea can have anywhere from 3 to 100 times the EGCG content of regular green tea. So if you're shopping just at the regular grocery store getting green tea bags or whatever the case may be, you switch to matcha, each serving will have between 3 and 100 times the EGCG content. What tends to happen is this EGCG is called a catechin. It's just a class of molecules. And throughout the processing of the tea leaves, these catechins can get oxidized and sort of destroyed. So this matcha has a ton of the good stuff in it. So actually on the Precision Nutrition forums that we have online for all of our Precision Nutrition customers, we have a little private forum area. There's actually a whole discussion about this, and there's some companies you can pick up your matcha green tea from. It tastes a little different. It's a little smoother, and it's got a ton of EGCG. So that's another way, independent of going out and buying the EGCG separately.
JB, a lot of people hate the taste of green tea. Yeah. I'm not too fond of it myself, and I find myself going through phases where occasionally I'll have green tea for a couple of weeks straight, and then for 2 months I won't touch this stuff. Yeah. Do you have any sort of strategies for incorporating green tea into your diet?
My favorite is getting peppermint tea. Like if you go to the bulk bar or any of these bulk, you can find tea, like loose tea bags that you can buy. What I do is I get peppermint tea, And then whenever I have green tea, I'll put my green tea in and I'll put peppermint tea in with it. And it just totally alters the flavor. So the green tea taste is almost eliminated. And you just taste that sort of that peppermint taste.
Minty so, fresh.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So that's one strategy. Just get an herbal tea or a peppermint tea or something that you like and add that in with each green tea serving. And that totally removes the taste objection. And there's actually, you know, peppermint oils have been shown to have some real positive gut health benefits as well. And that's specifically what we did with Dave Tate. We actually had him drinking green tea 3 times a day, but we introduced the peppermint along with it because he hated the green tea, but also because peppermint can have some nice effects on the GI. So it's a real nice combination.
All right, for this week's roundtable with JB, it's going to be a little bit of a different setup. Basically, just going to be asking questions to JB. First off, what upcoming projects do you have?
Well, there's a couple. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, John Williams and I have been friends for a while, and he knows I've always got all these freaking ideas, you know. And whether they all come to fruition or not, not really sure. But I'll talk about the ones that I know will. The first one is actually a new book coming out, and it's relevant. We're talking about it today because just this week I got the sort of final unedited galleys. From the book. I'm doing a second book with Rodale. Most people may be familiar with my Scrawny to Brawny muscle building book. This book is a little bit different of an angle. Sort of Scrawny to Brawny was, you know, go from scrawny to brawny, so get big. This one is a little bit different. It's sort of like from brawny to scrawny. the name of the book's called The Metabolism Advantage. And I authored it by myself. And whereas I work with Mike Mejia on the Scrawny to Brawny, and what it is, I'm really fond of this book. First of all, it's huge. It's like 300. I'm looking at it right now. The proofs. It's like 367 pages, it's probably one of the better things that I've projects that I've ever put out for this sort of genre, and the whole concept is. It's based around a single question, and the question is this: does the metabolism naturally slow down with age? And it's a question that most people have. It's a question that most people have an answer to, whether they know it or not. Most people in their 40s will undoubtedly say yes. But is it really true that their metabolism slowed down due to some aging factor, or something else, or a combination of other things in their life changed that led to their fat gain, their muscle loss, etc.? So we explore the topic in the first few sections of the book. And I'll give you the answer. The answer is no, that the metabolism doesn't necessarily have to slow down in a big way as we age. In fact, some population studies that have looked at individuals from 25 to 65, so their changes over their lifetime essentially, have shown that those people who remain just as active and eating just as much as when they were 25, when they're 65, only have a 0.27 reduction in metabolism percent.
Wow.
0.27%. It's not even 1% reduction. This whole idea that, oh, our metabolisms, yeah, they, of course, they start to slow down when we're 25, etc. No, it doesn't necessarily happen. It only happens when a combination of factors converge. We become more sedentary. And it's funny because I talk to people all the time who are like, no, but I didn't exercise when I was younger. Yes, you did. You just didn't do volitional exercise. You didn't go to the gym 3 days a week. But you did exercise. People are much more active when they're younger. I mean, even if it's like, you know, the Shoe Leather Express walking from class to class in school. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or hanging out after school or whatever the case may be. There's a lot more just sort of physical activity when we're younger. When we get older, that diminishes, and as a result, we tend to eat less, and a whole bunch of factors conspire towards our bodies worsening. So I review a lot of that research. I give you a lot of strategies for how to prevent it. Then there's 16 weeks of exercise and nutritional programming. There's recipes. There's a whole menu and meal plan. And one of the coolest things about the book is, you know, I mean, the reality is if you look around, there's no one way to have a decent body. You know, like, you see people who primarily do endurance exercise who have decent bodies, and people who primarily do strength training who have decent bodies, and people who do a mix who have decent bodies. So the whole concept was to introduce a sort of choose-your-own-adventure program, so that those people who want to do more endurance exercise can do that, those who want to do more strength training can do that, and those who like both can do both. And so it's like a choose-your-own-adventure exercise program in there, too.
That's excellent. Excellent idea.
Yeah, so I'm really pumped about this. This is actually coming out in September, called the Metabolism Advantage. Rodale's done an awesome job with this one. You know, my freshman effort with Scrawny to Brawny, I think, turned out awesome. There were some editorial problems, which a lot of people have commented about. I sort of have a new editor now, and all that stuff is fixed. This book is, I'm just really proud of it right now, and that's why I'm gushing about it. But anyway, it's you can look for that. And they're actually pre-selling it on Amazon right now, but we will. It'll be officially out in bookstores and stuff like that in September. So that's something that's taken quite a bit of time. It's actually been a year and a half in the making for this particular project.
So yeah, you know, the answer to your book, you know, is I'm going to love to read the book, but it's something that, you know, as an anthropologist or archaeologist, it's really a granted, and it's a given, because if you look at hunter-gatherer societies, people who can't sit at their desk all day, you don't have obese people, and the older people are not fat, and they look similar to the younger people. The caveat, of course, is in hunter-gatherer societies, you die probably in your 40s, or, you know, if you're lucky. But, you know, it's just something that people take for granted, that their metabolism slows down, but it doesn't really happen if you stay active your whole life. So I'm going to love to read this book.
Yeah, it was fascinating because, you know, I went on a little bit of a journey talking to experts and looking at the research and stuff like that, trying to answer the question. Because I remember hearing this sort of statement when I was in my early 20s. People saying, oh, yeah, you look good now, but wait till you hit 25 or 30 or 35. Then everything goes downhill. You can't keep that sort of body over time. And, I wondered if it was true. I wondered if, like, my efforts were fruitless and I was fighting, like, against the downhill, you know, decline of my physical health and the aesthetic, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, I really dug pretty deep into that topic and found some really cool data and stuff like that. And sort of the book is, you know, starts out as a bit of a tribute to the research that's been done in this area and the scientists who've sort of gotten at answers to this question. And then sort of my take on the dietary and training aspects necessary to sort of combat those things. Were sort of my contribution.
Sounds great.
Yeah, so that's coming out. Other new projects, I kind of hinted at it earlier, and I think John Williams here has been talking about it a little bit too, is that for a while now we've been trying to put together like a really cool new and improved version of Gourmet Nutrition, our recipe book, Optimal Eating Manual, whatever you want to call it. And so what we did was we hired a friend of mine who's just a fantastic, actually a fashion photographer, to do food pictures, and we're adding some new recipes, and we're giving it a whole set of edits, and we want to come out, you know, sort of with a full-blown hard copy, you know, something your mom would put on her shelf or put on a coffee table cookbook.
I think we should call it Gourmet Nutrition Extreme Makeover Edition.
Yeah. That's pretty popular nowadays, the makeover concept. So anyway, that's a little project. Actually, we're bringing Johnny up here to Toronto to come hang out in the city in the spring/summer here. And we're going to be putting together the finishing touches on that. And then that's when I'm going to pull Johnny aside and tell him that we're going to make him a star with his own Gourmet Nutrition cooking show.
Oh, boy. I do look pretty good in an apron, I have to admit. No, I'm totally down with that. It sounds awesome. And JB, you said you had a professional chef up there who's a friend of yours who wants to get in on this project.
Yeah, this guy's awesome. It's hilarious, too, for those who know John Williams, know what John Williams looks like. This guy's his name happens to be Mike Williams. And he looks a lot like John. I think they're long-lost brothers. And anyway, the guy's a professional chef. He's cooked all over. He's cooked in Switzerland. The guy learned how to speak German so he could go take a chef position over there. He's a really bright guy, wicked cook. He cooks all organic stuff. We had a little cooking session the other week in Victoria, and the guy shows up with all the organic veggies that were picked, hand-picked by him that morning. Just awesome stuff. The guy has some really cool takes on healthy eating and preparation.
Well, I am looking forward to it, JB, that's for sure.
Yeah, so those are the two big things on the horizon anyway.
Well, you know, I think we've gone a couple of hours now, so we should probably wrap it up so Kevin doesn't stay up all night trying to edit it. But Kevin, any final words?
I actually just wanted to throw in one more listener question, actually, yeah, in regards to Scrawny Tabrani.
Okay, yeah, kick it.
And this is actually someone that just joined the JP Fitness Board. This is actually his first post, believe it or not.
Okay.
But he actually just got the book, and he was going to the grocery store to stock up. And he was just wondering if there was any kind of variance to the Scrawny Tabrani diet where he could do it almost vegetarian.
Yeah.
Because he's looking to cut down on animal meat, and he's looking for some kind of options to offset that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of funny because in the past I was very anti-vegetarian. Primarily because most vegetarians do vegetarianism just flat out wrong. You know what I mean? They eat the same crappy foods as everyone else. They just don't eat meat. You know what I mean? So it never made it any better. But there's a subset of vegetarians who are conscientious and try to do a good job. And for whatever reason, they avoid meat. The one thing that I have to say right from the start is that there's some good evidence suggesting that those who don't eat animal protein will not get the same type of gains out of a weight training, strength training program. And it's not just looking at, you know, people who eat meat versus people who don't eat meat and see how big they are. They actually have some well-controlled, you know, 12, 16-week training studies where they were getting the same amount of protein, the same amount of calories, etc. And those who didn't eat meat had a really sort of negative response to the training relative to those who did. So I encourage people to try and include some meat in their diet. This doesn't mean they have to be like, you know, devouring raw animal carcass. You know, they could certainly, you know, include it infrequently or whatever based on their reasons for doing so. However, if completely non-meat eating people, you can certainly follow the Scrawny Tabrani nutrition plan. It's just going to take a little bit more planning, and it takes a better understanding of where to get your protein. My protein recommendations are high. I've been criticized for that, but the bottom line is it works. And you have to find other ways to get protein. So you can do it with dairy products. You can do it with protein supplements. You can do it with a little bit of things like tofu, including that. So really, I mean, I got Scrawny Tabrani in front of me right now. Any meal that says adding 8 ounces of lean protein, you just look, figure out how much protein is in that, and then figure out a substitute for it, so sort of a mix and match. So where can you get the protein from, and you sort of include a non-meat source there. So you might use eggs, you might use you know, dairy, you might use whatever, as long as you're conscientious about getting the nutrients. The one problem is when people eliminate meat, they don't add in enough calories from something else, so they end up being calorie deficient and never get the results, and then say, my program sucked, you know? I hate hearing that when it was actually their choices that sucked. If my program sucks, that's fine. But if your choices made the program suck, then that's your fault, not mine. So I don't want to take credit for your problem. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's certainly possible. I certainly have elite athletes who are vegan vegetarians that I work with, and they have success. One of them's one of the top athletes for a particular Canadian Olympic team that I work with. So it's possible. It just takes you being conscientious.
I'd like to thank Dr. John Berardi for coming on the FitCast. It's been our pleasure.
Hey, thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's been fun.
Well, that pretty much wraps it up for episode number 5 of the FitCast. My name's Kevin Larrabee.
And this is John Williams.
And this is JV, John Berardi.
All right, we'll see you next week, everyone. Thanks for downloading, and check out our show on iTunes. See you next week.